Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Reva Entine. Reva is the program director of the National Lawyers Guild San Francisco Bay Area chapter, and also the national vice president of the National Lawyers Guild. So she just got back from a Lawyers Guild, National Lawyers Guild conference in where was it, Reva?
Tucson, Arizona.
And you've been doing this work for a long time, I know. You're just one of those tireless workers for justice. I'd like to hear about what's been going on with the National Lawyers Guild. I know you've been around passing out these Know Your Rights brochures, which are so important all the time, of course, but especially since September 11th when the World Trade Center fell, or the towers. And we're in a real war situation here. So the National Lawyers Guild has a long history of being really working for people's rights when often other people don't. It's kind of the left of the lawyers.
Yes, and we call ourselves the legal arm of the movement. Mm-hmm. So we're there to support people struggling for social justice mm-hmm. by providing legal support when needed.
And I'm realizing as I talk to younger people that there's so much people don't understand. They don't feel nervous about our rights to the same extent. Some young people that I've spoken to, they don't feel as nervous as I do. And I'm realizing, listening and thinking more about the history, that, of course, these issues have been going on for a long time, sometimes much worse than others. And a lot of people have been locked up. For pretty much no reason. I mean, that's been going on throughout American history and sometimes more intensely than others. And it just doesn't fit with so many people's idea about the United States. Even if they're progressive people and critical sometimes of the government, they kind of don't get to the extent to which this is happening. So maybe you'd like to talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that makes the National Lawyers Guild unique is that we were formed in 1937, so we survived the McCarthy period, and we have people who survived it. We have people who are quite familiar with it. And even though you're right, many young people are not aware of what that really meant, the good news is that we're getting constant requests to provide speakers to colleges and community groups to talk about what the loss of civil liberties was like in the 50s, and we have expertise that we can provide. And in our national convention, we actually had more people come than we expected. And I think people came because when you live through the kind of period of the 50s, which, again, some of our members have, you understand the need for community and political solidarity. So people really came and showed up. And of the people who showed up who did survive the 50s, a lot of people said that it reminded them of the late 40s, the buildup to the crackdown. So again, we have expertise, but the good news is that people know that this is information that they need because it's haunting us today.
Would you say just a little bit more about the 50s and the McCarthy time? Because I imagine some of the listeners may not even ring a bell for them.
Well, you know, the brief is the House Un-American Activities Committee, led by McCarthy, was calling people to say, have you ever been or are you now a communist or do you know anybody who might have been? So basically people were brought before these hearings and threatened with contempt and imprisonment if they refused to basically snitch on their friends. And it was devastating in terms of people being blacklisted, not getting jobs. There were many people who committed suicide because they couldn't support their family. So it was truly, truly devastating to look at what this can be, to bring people before a government agency for really engaging in constitutionally protected activity. That's what I keep repeating, that we, just because you engage in constitutionally protected activity does not mean that you will not be contacted and incarcerated if you refuse to answer questions about your friends. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it can't just be answering questions about your friends. It doesn't have to be that you did anything or that they did anything. It's really can be very much harassment. So I just want to say to those of you who think, well, this is such a free country and we have to, even who are anti-communist, I mean, if we want to keep it free, then we have to keep on with this educating ourselves and standing up to keep it free, basically. It doesn't just automatically happen by itself.
And one of the ironies is, you know, that Bush had the nerve to say that the reason the terrorists attacked us is because they're resentful of our free way of life, when, with the other hand, he's taking all of those freedoms away from us. It's just the ultimate of hypocrisy.
Say more about that, taking our freedoms away from us. What is going on right now legislatively? Do you know where are things at right now as we speak, which is the middle of October?
Yeah. Well, nothing's final. But what I understand is the little bit of compromise that some of the progressive, quote-unquote, Democrats in the House worked on were killed. So what came out of the Senate is very close to what the president wanted, and it includes roving wiretaps. They don't have to say where they're going to go after you, unlimited detention for immigrants. Just much, much easier for them to enter and search a house without prior notice, again, holding people indefinitely. And other things that are happening that are not specific to the legislation, but I think in the context of this state of national emergency that the president declared, I think, on September 17th, is this whole thing about people being incommunicado, that there are people, it's now up to 700 people around the country who are being detained. It appears that many of them are not getting access to attorneys, which they have a right to. Some of them who have attorneys have been inaccessible to their attorneys. In other words, the attorneys have not been able to find them. There are political prisoners who are locked down who are not getting access to their attorneys. And that denial of access to attorneys might be unprecedented. From what I understand, it's extremely unusual. And when you look at what the government is doing to political prisoners or to immigrants, it could be a bellwether for what they will do to the rest of us. And if they consider that it's legitimate in this country to deny somebody in detention access to an attorney, that is a very bad sign.
Yeah. So what happened at the National Lawyers Guild Convention?
Well, what happened was really responding to this snatching up, picking up to 700 people, where the attorneys are, the federal authorities are maintaining an unprecedented wall of secrecy around the investigation. Documents are sealed, court hearings are closed, defense attorneys told not to speak, and that basically the American public is in the dark about what's going on. So what we decided is to hire somebody who will lead a network to gather and analyze and synthesize information that's coming in about these detainees. As she said, to define the landscape, what it's looking like in terms of how wide the net is. Are they all immigrants? We don't think so. They're mostly immigrants. Only a quarter of them are being held on immigration violations. And to start to begin to understand what the government is really looking for, which is way beyond the September 11th incident. It's going after anybody who has engaged in dissent for decades that basically Congress gave the president, and the Attorney General appears has a blank check to go after anybody that they consider dangerous to the American way of life, which can include sending medical aid to a country that is deemed harboring terrorists. So this person will be, again, gathering information to define the landscape and then to provide resources to people who are being denied access to attorneys to be sure that at least everybody gets representation.
Mm-hmm. This thing about harboring a terrorist is so incredible because, of course, the United States could be harboring terrorists. You don't always know when you're harboring terrorists. We could bomb ourselves. It's so out of hand. And I know, the women in black have been targeted by the FBI, women in black who stand there doing a vigil with black clothes on. I mean, you couldn't get much more visible and nonviolent than that.
Right. Right. And the other example that we have, of course, it's unacceptable that women in black, again, which engages in constitutionally protected activity, should be threatened with a subpoena to appear before a grand jury. But the other example that's chilling is this woman who was a Cuba solidarity worker. She worked with Cuba InfoMed, and she came home at 9:30 at night to an FBI agent at her door who said it was the second time he was there that day, and he was asking her questions about her work with Cuba InfoMed and whether the computers got to Cuba. So it's not even at this point limited to people doing Middle East solidarity work.
So basically, people really need to get that this is, If we value freedom, this is not freedom, it seems to me, especially without even being able to have a lawyer. So do you want to talk about this? What's in this pamphlet, Know Your Rights, Reva Entin from the National Lawyers Guild?
Well, this brochure is being taken up by people, and they really, really appreciate it. So it's talking about rights that people have, right to advocate for change, to remain silent, to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures, which actually is being stripped away as we speak. The gist of it is what to do if agents come to question. And the basic is that you do not have to talk to the police, the FBI, the INS, or any other law enforcement agent or investigator. So what we're recommending, what this brochure recommends and what the National Lawyers Guild is asserting repeatedly, is that if people are contacted by a government agent, they don't talk and say, I need to talk to my lawyer first, because we're encouraging people not to cooperate and at least to talk to a lawyer before they say anything. Because the problem is that people will think, I have nothing to hide, so why not talk? And the problem with that is you don't know what you say that they might use to get from A to B to C and then to get something on somebody. So you really don't know that what you're saying will be innocuous and benign. Mm-hmm. So that's why everybody should speak to an attorney, certainly before they talk to any FBI agent.
And it's kind of intimidating to be talking to a government agent at your door. I'm sure people kind of go, they're not in their clearest mind oftentimes when that happens.
Right. So they, again, think, I'll look suspicious if I say no. And we did get a lot of calls from people who are saying, well, they're going to assume that I'm guilty if I don't want to talk. And we just say, you have a right. You can assert your right not to speak. You have a right to talk to an attorney first. There's another part of the brochure that talks about what rights if a person is not a citizen. They don't have to reveal their immigration status. Foreign nationals who are arrested have a right to call their consulate, and they don't have to talk to the INS even on the phone. So the gist of it is to know and assert your rights. You can only assert your rights if you know what they are. And there's another section that this version doesn't have that talks about rights specific to juveniles. Mm-hmm.
You know, this issue of locking up immigrants and blaming it on this, always, it's kind of an old-fashioned thing. Oh, it's those guys from that other town down the road. It's nobody from our village that could have done whatever bad thing just got done. It's sort of a larger scale of that, in a way.
And again, how the government is casting this whole thing, when the anthrax scare began, the government was saying, well, we don't really think the anthrax has anything to do with bin Laden. Of course, they haven't produced evidence that bin Laden has anything to do with September 11th either, for that matter. But now they're beginning to say that he does appear to be behind the anthrax. And it's pure speculation. Again, they have not produced any evidence. And the government is just trying to create this mass fear and mass hysteria so the public will continue to give the government a blank check to go after dissent. And that means the end of the American way of life as we know and cherish it.
Mm-hmm. Reva Entin, would you like to comment on what you think is any more about what's going on politically? I know you're an attorney, and that's how you're speaking here from that point of view. Is there anything, any other kinds of comments or stories you'd like to tell about your own analysis or groups that you're involved with?
Well, some of the analysis is, again, this fear that appears to be pervading in Congress, that we have lost basically all voices of dissent within Congress. We don't see the Congressional Black Caucus. We don't see the Progressive Caucus. Even the one courageous voice, Barbara Lee, who voted against the blank check for war, is not condemning the bombing at this point. And it just feels like you could substitute the word terrorism for what was the word communism in the 50s. And there's just this fear that that Congress appears to be paralyzed. in expressing any form of dissent or even any kind of questioning or voices of restraint or anything rational. Because part of what I look at, because I think we need to look from a rational point of view, and I like to start from the bottom line that everybody in the world has a priority to feel safe and secure. And what do we do to get there? And the knee-jerk reaction to September 11th might be vengeance, but it's not a rational response to make people feel safer, because we know it's just going to provoke more attacks. And it feels like the government, and again, those old voices of progressive reason no longer appear to be audible. But a rational response would be, let's look towards international law. Let's provide some evidence to show to the world court so they can issue an injunction to demand that Afghanistan turn him over, in fact, if we even know that he's there, but that vengeance and retaliation will do nothing to make anybody feel safer and more secure. And the only way to make people feel safe and secure and peaceful in this world is to abide by the international law that was established after World War II to prevent that kind of world crisis from recurring, and we see it recurring.
Yeah, really, it doesn't. It's just there's no possible way that killing more and more people can be helpful. Tell the story about what your daughter said. I just think it's so wonderful. Your daughter's how old?
She's 12, and she came down a few weeks ago for breakfast before going to school, and she said she called into her radio station. So it was a shock jock kind of regular radio station, and I said, what do you say? And she said that in this country, people are innocent until proven guilty, and how can the United States bomb a whole country before we know who did it? And the person who took her call said they agreed with her, but they did not air it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that just sums it up. It's so hard for me, and so many people just kind of don't make that connection that it's real people that are being killed, and there's this really deep thing that it's one thing if Americans get killed, it's another thing if other people get killed, especially if they're people of color. It's so connected to racism, not only racism, but it's really deep. And the thing that sometimes most distresses me is, how come people don't get it? You know, that being bombed is, I mean, it's supposedly people are really shredded, and it's horrendous. I mean, I don't like it done with my tax money. I don't care who it is.
Yeah, I don't know why people don't get it, frankly. And with TV, it's all very vivid what we're talking about when we get access. One other example that's kind of chilling again in terms of how wide the net is, and Canada appears to be working with the United States. So there are two people who work with School of the Americas Watch who are going up into Canada to do some trainings, and that's nonviolent civil disobedience to prevent death squads from killing people in Central America. And a German national was held at the border, and they went through his material. They found out what he was doing. He is now in detention. They're talking about deporting him. But they said explicitly, this is the Canadian government that put him back over into the United States, so he's held in the United States. But the Canadian government said that part of the reason he would not be admitted to Canada is because they suspect that he would encourage Canadians to protest. It's very explicit that they are out to squelch voices of dissent, even if they are peaceful, even if they are constitutionally protected. This is not about bin Laden. This is not about Afghanistan. This is not about the terrorism of September 11th.
Mm-hmm. And with so many things, as with so many things, if this were happening in another country, the United States and its citizens would be saying, oh, it's so terrible in that other country. We used to say it about Russia, China, and these things have happened in other countries for sure. And we prided ourselves, well, that's kind of where we started out this program, talking about freedom. But that's another thing that people really need to get. And sometimes it's not like very complicated to get. It's just basic reason 101, rationality 101. And Reva Entin, since you work with the National Lawyers Guild, I know that you have been involved over the years with many cases where things are happening that we would, in fact, say if those things were happening in another country, the U.S. would be very upset in talking about human rights violations. Do you want to talk any more about any other kinds of issues, just since we have you here, to sort of educate people about political prisoners and different things that have been going on in this country right along?
Sure. And I want to talk a little bit more about the concept of terrorist and how it's being used. And yes, the United States certainly harbors terrorists. I mean, there are many people who say, many people on the left who are beginning to say, even if there is evidence on bin Laden, he shouldn't be brought to justice unless people like Henry Kissinger are. You know, the Cuban Americans in Miami are terrorists, and we know it, and we are harboring them and giving them money. Another thing that I like to remind people about is Nelson Mandela was named a terrorist, and his organization, the African National Congress, was deemed a terrorist organization, and he became president of South Africa. So it's very... it's a dangerous word to use. Oh, another one of my favorite quotes. I highly recommend this book called Rogue State by a guy, Blum, who used to work with the CIA. And he said that a terrorist is someone with a bomb but no Air Force. And I think people really need to look at the U.S. behavior and look at it in the context of terrorism. We are terrorizing countries. We are starving people. We have been bombing Iraq for 10 years. But it's not terrorism because it's our Air Force.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about this bombing of Iraq, because I find that, well, of course, we always come back to the issue of the media and people having information, because often they don't have the information. Or if it's on the back page of the newspaper or it's mentioned for 1 second, it kind of is not enough to sink in, and the media is so very, very important. And then sometimes when they have the information, they still don't care. They still don't kind of get it. You know, it's just like you're just eating dinner and a bomb is dropping on you that who's getting killed is just regular people.
You know, that struck me today because I heard that this is the 10th day of bombing in Afghanistan. And if I remember correctly, the war in Iraq in 1991, I guess, was 10 days long as the U.S. press related. It was a 10-day war and then the military left. And, of course, the bombing has continued for 10 years. But in terms of the left resistance to the war, our resistance died down after those 10 days. In the Bay Area, we had 1,200 people arrested in those 10 days. We had 900 people go to trial. But the left lost its momentum because it was portrayed as a war that had ended. And for those of us who are staying abreast of these issues, the war never ended. But it struck me that today is day 10 in Afghanistan, and we really need to be alert as to what continues even after the U.S. press says, it's over, we're not there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even, I mean, at least with Iraq, you can't even call it a war because there's no two sides fighting. With Iraq, it's just the United States bombing, is my impression. So, I mean, when we say the word terror, I mean, I think I'm getting in touch with what it feels like to feel terror, and I'm not half as scared as a lot of people are. And it's like totally nerve-wracking. You never know when something's going to happen, which is crazy-making. Even if nothing ever does happen, it puts everybody really on edge. And to me, it's always amazing, too, how these people survive these situations all over the world, which are so full of terror. And I'm thinking of El Salvador, where there was so much people's heads and genitals cut off and they're left on the side of the road for their, you know, the kid could be walking along the road and see their uncle there. I mean, I'm getting graphic because that's, I mean, I give thanks have not been in this situation, but I've so sure heard enough stories. And to just think a little bit about the effects, this kind of thing, the emotional, psychological, nervous kind of effects this has on people.
I've been thinking about that, too. Again, I have two kids, 12 and 15, who are very aware and alert about current events. And I'm aware of how it's affecting them psychologically, and I'm aware that my terror all of a sudden now is it going to be anthrax, for example, or some other form of biological warfare, and that it's making the United States feel what people around the world have been feeling, although it's not heads and genitals along the side of the road. But again, in terms of our children and how much of my fear I let on to my children and how much they're picking up without it being talked about, and does that make it worse? There are many, many, many issues that, frankly, it would behoove Americans to start talking to people around the world who have been living with this for decades and decades to see what this is doing to our collective psyche and how we're going to ever achieve a peaceful world.
Mm-hmm. Collective psyche is right, because we are all here on this one planet.
And we have to protect it.
Yeah. Well, what else can we talk about here? It's really good to be talking about these things as just people too, because when I started the interview talking about this is the left, you know, I thought, oh, people are going to say, oh, there are those. It's my own little paranoia because people are so programmed not to think or, you know, to go for kind of key words and reject or accept people based on that. Myself included, I've certainly been guilty of that, and really it's bringing it down to the human scale in a way for people to really understand. So it's interesting to, you know, be talking about our kids and everything, and it really, people have been saying, well, the world is not the same. It's not the same for us as it was before September 11th, and probably for a lot of people it hasn't changed that much.
It's true, but also I think we're not giving people enough credit. From what I hear, people are beginning to ask hard questions. For example, even though the press is saying 92% support what the U.S. is doing, my understanding is there was a poll that was done in Village Voice last week in which, yes, 92% said, yes, let's bomb them. But when asked if they would support, if there's evidence that bin Laden did it, that they would support him being brought before an international tribunal and tried rather than bombing Afghanistan, 48% recommended that he would be brought before a tribunal, which is remarkable. It's only the fifth week of the war. And when you think about our resistance to the Vietnam War and how it took a long time to build resistance to it, I actually think that the left is getting stronger and the resistance is getting stronger. The problem is that we're going to have to, our backs are going to be up against this abridgment of our civil rights, and we're just going to have to stay strong.
Mm-hmm. So we do have to stand up against this abridgment of our civil rights, and that takes us a certain amount of courage. I'm sure the National Lawyers Guild could be targeted just as well as anybody, right? What about that?
We were targeted in the 50s as a subversive organization, and we had a chat. Sued the FBI, and we were taken off that list. So we certainly know what that is. And again, we were engaged in constitutionally protected activity then. We are still engaged in constitutionally protected activity now. And we will challenge any type of designation as a terrorist organization. And we will lend support to any group that's so targeted as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really important to know. And then we need to know how to get hold of you. So everybody get ready to write down how you get hold of the National Lawyers Guild, and keep it around so that you'll have the information, and you can also pass it on to your friends.
Well, the Guild has a website, which is www.nlg.org. That's NLG for National Lawyers Guild. The San Francisco office, where I work out of, is 415-285-1055. And the National Office of the Guild, which is in New York, which will be spearheading this new network that we're developing to track this situation. The number there is 212-627-2656.
Okay, would you just repeat all that information, please, for those who didn't quite get it?
Okay. Again, the easy way to access our information for free is on the website www.nlg.org. That's NLG for National Lawyers Guild.org. The San Francisco number where I work is 415-285-1055. The National Office of the Guild is in New York, and that number is 212-627-2656.
And Reva Entin, who you've been hearing, is the National Vice President of the National Lawyers Guild and the Program Director of the San Francisco Bay Area Chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. And I want to thank you very much, Reva. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks very much for listening.